Money FM 89.3, the best of your money. Market View on Money FM 89.3.
I'm Michelle Martin. Good Friday morning, everybody. Joining me in the studio, the author of the Dividend Titan finance blog, Willie King himself. Good morning, Willie.
Good morning, Michelle.
How are you doing this Friday?
Friday's always good, but I was a bit tired because I realized that now with the morning shows this week, yeah, I actually went for runs, right? Because I usually go for runs. And now because I don't really have much sleep because of the morning show, plus the run itself made me really tired over the evening. So I was just knocked dead last night.
Welcome to the world of radio where you're usually knocked dead after your show, I have to say.
Now I know that, Michelle. Now I know. Now I know your sleeping hours.
You got to step into our shoes and then you realize it, right? I mean, when you say knocked dead, literally you're walking around like in a coma, right?
Exactly. I was just zoned out like a zombie.
Well, I'm glad we have you at this part of the morning where you're still bursting with energy, Willie. We begin this morning with corporate earnings and the world of big tech. In fact, two of the biggest companies on the planet are reporting profits this morning. Microsoft and Google's parent company, Alphabet. And I have to say the picture at both companies appears to be pretty solid. I'm going to start with Alphabet. Some analysts are saying Alphabet has scored a hat trick by announcing strong profit numbers, a $70 billion US share buyback, and its first ever cash dividend. Take a closer look at the numbers. Alphabet grossed $80 billion US dollars during the first quarter of this year. That's 15% higher than a year earlier. And it marks the fourth consecutive quarter of accelerating year-on-year revenue growth for the tech giant. So what's powering Alphabet's growth?
It's pretty interesting because Alphabet is largely driven by advertising revenue. So two things here. Number one is their YouTube revenue, which has done pretty well. On top of that, they also have their Google search engine, which has been a monopoly in the business itself. I think they have owned more than half of the market share in search. But what's interesting and what's really driving Alphabet's business is the Google Cloud revenue. So that have actually hit, surpassed estimates to $9.6 billion. And that has surpassed a lot of Wall Street's estimates. The thing is, when we are going to technology, a lot of the companies are slowly moving, you know, from your physical hard disk or your physical servers into cloud. So many of them are doing storages into their software, onto some of these hyperscalers software system. Even for myself, when I write a blog, all of my articles and my videos are all stored online on the cloud itself. And, you know, Google is actually one of, or Alphabet is actually one of the big players in trying to dominate the cloud market, and that has done really well for them.
You're right. I can't imagine churning out content without the cloud these days. Google's ad sales usually dominate investor interest, but this time round, investors are also looking closely at whether the company's investments in artificial intelligence are starting to pay off, and it certainly looks like they are. Alphabet has been plowing money into developing AI, and this has helped drive demand for its cloud services. Google's cloud division enjoyed a 28% jump in first quarter profits. Google is still a distant third, though, in the cloud computing market behind Amazon and Microsoft. But its strength in AI could help it close this gap. I want to turn to what I mentioned at the top of the show, and that's Alphabet's cash dividend and share buybacks. How much will investors receive? And are you surprised to see Alphabet handing so much back to shareholders?
It's a very good point here. I mean, if you see, Alphabet is basically following what Meta Platforms is doing, which had announced its first dividend in February. So now Alphabet is sort of following suit, which approved its first cash dividends of 20 cents per share. While it's not a lot, and it's not really a common habit for many big tech companies to post, you know, very high dividend payout, but this is a first step. And it's also a transition, showing to the market that Alphabet is transitioning or maturing from what you call a startup high growth company to a more mature but more modest growth, more stable, predictable, stable growth here for the company itself. And the dividends is a reflection of what Alphabet is sort of transitioning into. So kind of a good news for more traditional, safer, conservative investors.
Investors definitely like these numbers as well as the prospect of dividend payments. Shares of Alphabet are up more than 11% in after-hours action. Next up is Microsoft. Its net profits jumped nearly 20% in the January to March quarter to about $22 billion US dollars. Let's look at revenue at its Azure Cloud division. Well, that grew even faster. What strikes you when you look at Microsoft's numbers this morning, Willie?
I think it's pretty interesting. Microsoft has always been a popular choice among the Magnificent Seven ever since they have actually tried to convert their perpetual softwares into recurring payment. That has actually done really well for them. So Microsoft total revenue grew 17% year over year, which ended in the latest quarter itself. And this was really driven by their core business in their intelligent cloud segment, which include their Azure public cloud, Windows servers, so on and so forth. So Microsoft is creating that ecosystem where they're trying to get consumers, especially business consumers, to get onto their ecosystem to make use of their cloud servers, also their operating system. So it's pretty interesting for Microsoft here.
Next up is Microsoft. Its net profits jumped nearly 20%. Microsoft shares trading at about 4.5% in after-hours trade. Yesterday, investors dumped Meta shares after it reported results, even though the company beat expectations. Mark Zuckerberg's net worth actually plunged by $18 billion US overnight as shares of Meta fell 10%. So if we take a step back, why do you think investors have been reacting so differently to Microsoft and Alphabet? Why are their shares jumping in after-hours trade?
I think one thing to note on is that what investors are liking to see is what I call recurring profits. Because many of the technology companies, the thing is, if you see traditionally, many companies, they see themselves as trying to grow users, trying to venture into different business segments. So for example, when Meta announced that they are looking into augmented reality, investing more capital into artificial intelligence, the market doesn't really like that sound of it. However, if you're looking at Alphabet and Microsoft, where they are talking about growing revenues and profits in their recurring business, especially in Alphabet's advertising and cloud business, Microsoft also in their cloud business, investors seem to like it, because at the end of the day, with this kind of very shaky, uncertain environment, long-term investors or even the market, what they really want at the end of the day is some form of certainty and stability. So recurring income is one big theme, especially when it comes to the more volatile technology sector.
Let's bring the conversation to Singapore now. And one of our city's prominent companies, Keppel, is reporting earnings as well. On the one hand, I'm seeing headlines about robust growth. On the other, it appears that legacy investments are a drag on profits. What's the latest here?
So it's interesting here. Keppel has reported revenue for its operations of $1.5 billion, which was 6% lower than the $1.6 billion from the quarter before, even though it saw contributions from its infrastructure and connectivity segments, which offset the low revenue from its real estate segment. So it seems like for Keppel, the bad news is on its legacy and offshore marine assets, even though this has mitigated stronger performance from its infrastructure and connectivity segments. Now, interestingly for Keppel, they have done pretty well in terms of their real estate business, because this is a big contrast to, say, for example, CapitaLand Investment, where they are sort of struggling with their China properties and their property developments in China. But for Keppel itself, it seems that it does have some improvement there. So I think something must be doing right for Keppel's management.
Yeah, shares of Keppel finished down about 1% yesterday. They're off 6.5% over the past month. Broadly, what's your take on the company?
I think Keppel has done a right move to spin off its offshore marine assets and try to focus on two things. Number one, their investments. Number two, on their property developments. And property development, I think a large part of it is in China and in Vietnam. So there are also concerns, you know, whether, you know, with China's struggling market, can they actually continue to pull through? But interestingly, Keppel Corp so far has done pretty okay or pretty manageable on top of their property development. Because if you see, for most of the Singapore conglomerates or the Singapore companies, most of the focus is moving towards either your financials, infrastructure development, or your property development. I think Keppel Corp has sort of made that right step. If you think about it, offshore marine assets tend to be a bit more volatile because they're driven by one big variable, which is oil prices. Even though oil prices have done pretty well, you know, across the last few years, but it's very difficult to say, you know, when we will experience that same 2014-2015 oil price crash when barrels dropped to about $20 plus to $30 a barrel. And that could actually shake up companies like Keppel.
Excellent, incisive overview. Willie King is my guest this morning. We're going to turn to the U.S. here on Market View, where investors are digesting first quarter GDP numbers. The U.S. economy grew less than expected, just 1.6%. And it appears that higher interest rates may be causing a slowdown in the world's biggest economy, even if consumer spending is still going strong. The Dow closed down 1%. In news overnight, the S&P 500 and NASDAQ lost ground as well, though not quite as much. We should caution that first quarter results don't seem to be a trend. If the U.S. economy is indeed slowing down significantly, how do these latest growth numbers affect your take on U.S. equities? I mean, does it impact your investment strategy at all?
I think this is a good point here. Number one, I think if you look at how the U.S. economy here, I think what they are worried about or concerned about is what I call a stagflation. And this has actually happened in the 1970s, where you have very strong inflation data coming out, or very strong inflation growth, but at the same time, the U.S. economy wasn't doing very well. So inflation was really, back then, was driven mostly by oil, the hike in oil prices. But these days, what you are looking at is a different taste, although the pattern seems very similar here. So I think that's one big concern here. And I like to sort of quote or comment on my favorite investor, Howard Marks. And he did say that while interest rates might not be the same as it was 15 years ago, interest rates are actually at a much elevated environment today, largely because there's a slowdown in stimulus measures by the Fed, for example. And at the same time, you have sort of a very high inflation data coming out. So he actually looks at slightly higher interest rates, and that could actually impact markets. Now, for me, Michelle, as a bottom-up investor, whether the market is doing well or not doing well, how interest rates are doesn't really matter too much to me, as long as I can invest in companies or buy companies where they have a strong dominance in their market or in their niche, and also being able to sell products and services which gets people to come back, you know, for more, you know, every single, you know, every day, not every day, but they will still come back regularly. This is something which I want to look at, because I'm not looking for companies where they might disrupt or change the entire industry today. Oh. What I'm looking for is businesses where they have some form of predictable profits over the next 15, 20 years. So somewhat like what we mentioned earlier, like Alphabet or even Microsoft.
Dominance and recurring revenue. Stay focused. Those are Willie's rules. I love it. Time for corporate news and our daily game of up or down. We have two rounds today. The first one is international. Here we go. Let's start with BHP, the Anglo-American mining firm.
So BHP is down for me after it actually provoked a backlash from the South African government and some of their major shareholders. So context, BHP is proposing to buy out rival Anglo American, which is one of the largest, if not the largest, platinum producer for about £31 billion deal. And so far, the Australia-based BHP said that it had made an all-stock proposal to buy out the platinum producer. And it basically is a metal which is critical for the world's efforts to go on a decarbonized route.
Indeed, critical. It suffered a series of missteps over the past 2 years, this company, though, BHP. Its share price has plummeted, and now BHP is moving in, trying to pick up the pieces. In fact, BHP wants to break up Anglo American into pieces so it can cherry pick the best assets. This is potentially a huge deal worth $39 billion US dollars. BHP shares fell 2% in London trade yesterday, but I'd say this is going to be an up for BHP and a down for Anglo American. All right, let's look at Pfizer and BioNTech.
So Glaukos, this is a down for me from two of the companies, Pfizer and BioNTech, after GlaxoSmithKline or GSK accused them of infringing its patents related to the messenger RNA technology in the company's blockbuster COVID-19 vaccines.
Indeed. What a suit this is, huh? Two juggernauts going at each other. GlaxoSmithKline suing Pfizer and BioNTech. It says the two companies infringe on its patent when they launch an mRNA COVID-19 vaccine. I expect this lawsuit's going to be costly, long drawn out. It'll take a while to settle. So I think it's a down for all parties involved. Next up, I'm looking at another pharma company, AstraZeneca.
AstraZeneca is an up for me after it continued to see pretty strong earnings and driven by its oncology segment as well as its respiratory and immunology segment. So far, AstraZeneca has reported pretty good results on its earnings per share and revenue growth, largely because of its growing partner drug sales and also increasing demand for its best-selling medicines. So total revenue has grown to close to 19% to $12.6 billion. Revenue for its oncology product, which is one of its main drugs, jumped 26% with its respiratory and immunology revenue rising 17% here.
I join you on that up. Shares of AstraZeneca jumped 6% in London trade yesterday on the back of those strong profit numbers. Now that's an up for the Anglo-Swedish drug maker for sure. All right, let's look at VinFast.
VinFast is an up for me after its founder, Vietnamese billionaire Pham, was considering to deploy $1 billion into its NASDAQ-listed electric vehicle, VinFast. And so this is an up for me. Interestingly, this comes when VinFast is still trying to make a profit and also compete with some of the electric vehicle competition in the region.
Yeah, the head of VinFast says he's going to invest $1 billion of his own money in the Vietnamese EV maker. VinFast shares have had a pretty rough time since they listed on NASDAQ. That's putting it lightly. At one point last August, VinFast was trading at $68 a share. Today, it trades at less than $3. Still putting $1 billion of fresh capital in the company, I think, counts for an up this morning. Time for round two, and let's bring the conversation back to Singapore and look at iFast.
iFast has been doing pretty well. I mean, if you look at its recent quarter, it has posted over 380% rise in its net profit to $14.5 million. So that was up previously from $3 million. So this is an up for me, and its profits are driven mainly by its ePension business unit, which is in Hong Kong, as well as improvements in its core wealth management platform business. So pretty interesting for iFast here, because on one hand, they are actually trying to grow the pie of the business. So they actually acquire a bank overseas, and also acquiring businesses in Hong Kong in order to increase their assets under advisory, or what you call AUA. So far, iFast has been a big growth over the last 20 years. In fact, when they first started out in early 2000, you know, they were faced with many competition as a distributor of unit trust, but they've since managed to survive. You know, last 20 years, they have grown pretty fast. They have survived the COVID pandemic. They have survived also the 2022 sell-off in tech stocks. So this is pretty interesting.
Is iFast on your dividends watch list?
Well, this is something definitely on the lookout for me, for iFast. So they have started paying out dividends and it's been growing fast. One thing which is stopping me from putting my money, as a disclaimer, is looking at the amount of yield which it has compared to the other Singapore dividend stocks.
Fascinating. If you'd like to learn more about his takes on dividend stocks, we just did a show with Willie recently. You can check that out in the playlist, Your Money. All right, Great Eastern is next on the list, Willie.
So Great Eastern is a down for me after its not so good profits which you have reported. So Great Eastern's net profit attributed to shareholders fell 13% year-on-year. And at the same time, its insurance service full-year results dropped 29%, largely because of very unfavorable claims. Although this has sort of been balanced by better unrealized gains on its investments. So this is a down for me for Great Eastern.
Great Eastern shareholders are upset that the stock is not performing better. In fact, the company's chairman, Soon Tit Koon, is calling for patience, something that shareholders do not often have. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. Suntec REIT
is a down for me after it has reported a distribution per unit of 1.5 cents, which is 1.8% lower year-on-year. So Suntec REIT is no stranger to Singapore investors. They own your Suntec City office, your Suntec malls. Now, what's interesting here is that they are trying to keep up with the occupancy rate in their Suntec mall. So that's something which has always been on their cards and always been on the top of their mind. So that is something. At the same time, also trying to manage borrowing costs. And this lower revenues and rent and operating performance is a reflection of the lower occupancy rate which they are currently facing.
Not a good season for REITs, including Suntec. I was going to say sunset for some reason. That's a down for me. Let's look at Changi Airport.
Changi Airport is an up for me after it has hosted over 6,800 weekly flights connecting to 153 global cities. And this really comes on the back of a big recovery after the pandemic. People are starting to travel and it seems like the pandemic is sort of a thing of a past now. People are not really talking about it and all they want to do on their minds is just to go out and spend money from their wallets.
And travel as well. Mask off. All right, air travel is up and so is Changi in my book. Let's check in on local markets now. The Straits Times Index finished marginally lower yesterday, breaking a three-session winning streak to close a fraction of a percent down at 32.87. Keppel was the worst performing STI constituent. As we discussed a little earlier, it finished down 3.5%. Genting, Singapore and UOB were among the worst performing blue chips, each falling about 2%. On the other end of the table, bargain hunters bid up shares of Seatrium and Hong Kong Land. Hong Kong Land rallied 1.6%. It is up nearly 10% over the past five trading sessions. We talked about Hong Kong Land on the show Wednesday. And Willie, you shared that you're bullish on Hong Kong stocks. Again, you need to listen to Willie all over again on audio Spotify for that one. As for Seatrium, it finished up 2.3% yesterday. It is now up 16% over the past week. Not sure I understand this one. The O&M company lost nearly $2 billion last year, but it has given its directors a raise, a pretty big one too, more than 20%. Now, on top of that, this past week, Seatrium lost nearly $150 million in an arbitration decision related to vendor fees, and it has to pay another $100 million in fines to wrap up a corruption case. None of this seems to be good news. So why is Seatrium rallying? Why has share price, do you think, gone up 16% in recent days?
Yeah, so I think one reason is probably because of a more optimistic oil price outlook here, because when you're talking about Seatrium, they are largely driven by oil prices. So despite the fact that, you know, they might have conflicts or they might have some disputes in terms of contract disagreements and termination of contracts, I think what's going on for Seatrium is probably investors are probably more optimistic, number one, from a more positive US economy. So that could actually support oil prices. And at the same time, while Seatrium's one of the big drivers is in oil prices, that could also be one of the big decisions or big drivers why the market is positive about Seatrium. And that's the reason, probably the reason why share price have actually been positive.
I've asked you before, but I'll ask you again. I like to check in on you periodically with this question. Do you think the tide has turned for Seatrium, or is this just a dead cat bounce?
I think this is a very good point here, a very good question. So for me, looking from a bottom-up perspective, and for me also, if I have to rely on one variable, which is oil prices, that could be a bit tricky investing in one company. For Seatrium, it's going to take a while for operations to play out, because if you look from a business perspective, they just came out from a joint venture deal with Keppel after the merger. So that takes a while to sort of what you call reorganize the entire operations. That's one. Number two, you still need to invest capital into the business to actually develop some of their contracts. And number three, if you look at offshore marine players, they tend to have different distributors or different middlemen across the supply chain. So as you move from one point to another through the different middlemen, there could be things like frauds, corruption cases, and disputes, which could actually slow down some of its projects and its order books. So it might take a while for Seatrium to play out. At the same time, they probably need to actually get some financing to maintain some of their operations while they might struggle with making a profit.
Could take a while, and they probably need some help with cash flow. He's Willie King. You're on the money right here on Money FM 89.3. Willie, have a great weekend.
Thank you, Michelle.
Thanks for being here.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at audio.sg or download the audio app. That's AWEDIO, audio, at the App Store and Google Play.